Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week's topic on Talk Nation Radio, whistleblowers, those heroes who inform the public at great risk to themselves when the government is violating the law. How is President Obama treating whistleblowers?
Obama is a mixed bag. In the area of national security, it has been a disaster.
President George W. Bush was no defender of whistleblowers either. Take the case of Sybelle Edmonds, a translator for the FBI, who
saw what was going on and realized that there were actual security issues for people who she believed might even be spying and giving information to the enemy.
Every branch of government has sought to censor Sybelle Edmonds' story for years now, and the FBI is refusing to approve her new book, Classified Woman, for publication or to identify anything in it that cannot be legally published.
Sybelle signs an agreement. Under this agreement, it says the FBI has 30 days to review a book and either approve it or not, and if they find anything confidential, to black it out. And that was a compromise. So Sybelle submitted her book nearly a year ago, lawfully, and we gave the FBI, I'm representing her on this, we gave the FBI the 30 days. They didn't do anything.
I am thrilled to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio this week, Stephen M. Cohn. He is the executive director of the National Whistleblower Center. He is the author of 8 books related to whistleblower law, including The American Political Prisoners and The Whistleblower's Handbook. Stephen, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I'm hopeful we can talk about the status of whistleblowers in this country in general, but I want to start with the topic of another book that is being published now by Sybelle Edmonds with resistance from the FBI. What is the story here?
Sybelle worked for the FBI. So as part of that employment agreement, she had to sign a letter that said that before she publishes a book or writes an article, she would submit it to the FBI for review to make sure that there's nothing confidential or secret, that she's revealing a secret. Now, I want to say that under our constitutional rule of law, any type of government review of speech is considered forbidden, with very, very narrow exceptions. Our founding fathers most feared the king coming in and trying to stop the publication of a book or a pamphlet. So they were really against it. So when our Supreme Court authorized agencies like the FBI to do this pre-publication process, they intended it to be extremely narrow to be consistent with our First Amendment. So Sybelle signs an agreement. Under this agreement, it says the FBI has 30 days to review a book and either approve it or not, and if they find anything confidential, to black it out. And that was a compromise. So Sybelle submitted her book nearly a year ago, lawfully, and we gave the FBI, I'm representing her on this, we gave the FBI the 30 days. They didn't do anything. Nothing. So we appealed it to the director of the FBI. Nothing. We then told the FBI that their time was up, that Sybelle is free to publish, essentially calling them out, saying, look, we're going to publish this thing. Do something. Nothing, except for letters coming back saying, Sybelle Edmonds does not have permission to publish. Sybelle Edmonds does not have permission to publish. So the FBI willfully and intentionally has violated their rules on pre-publication clearance, very clear court precedent, and they're doing it to try to scare Sybelle into not writing a book to tell the American people about the abuses that she has seen. And that is unconstitutional.
It seems like an expansion of power in the way that state secrets claims are not used for particular secrets anymore so much as entire court cases and entire categories of court cases. Here they are trying to essentially black out an entire book. Presumably to suppress the entire book, or do you imagine they think the book would get more attention with bits of it blacked out than it's going to get published in its entirety with nothing blacked out?
Well, here's my assessment. Under the law, what they're allowed to black out is extremely limited. And Sibel has told me that there's absolutely nothing in her book that could be considered classified or secret. She sourced everything. So now the FBI has a book that they can't black anything out on, but the FBI doesn't want it published. Now, they've done this in other cases, so what do? They just don't approve it. And by not approving it, they scare the authors, the publishers, even the readers who may be afraid of being in possession of an illegal book. As that's an oxymoron to begin with, books should never be illegal, but we've moved in that direction. So if they can, by delay, create a chilling fact and intimidate people, that's what they're doing. Because I look at other cases, the rule says 30 days, and sometimes people have been tangled up in this clearance process for years. And it's unconstitutional, but you can see how it can scare you, because the government is saying, if you publish something that's classified, you can go to jail. We can indict you under the Espionage Act or for some other law. You know, so that threat is enough to scare most people. So it serves the FBI and the CIA and the National Security Agency. You know, it serves them well. Just don't approve it and scare most people from publishing. And who are the losers? The American people who have a constitutional right to learn about government misconduct and take action. If the government uses these pre-publication clearance procedures in an abusive fashion to threaten authors and censor the right of the American people to learn about government abuses, we are moving away from being a democracy and really going down a terrible road where authors are afraid to write and print. And that is the exact type of censorship, the exact type of fear that our founding fathers were totally against. And it's why they wrote the First Amendment.
Stephen Cohn with the National Whistleblowers Center. Sibel Edmonds' book is then rather appropriately titled Classified Woman. For those who are not familiar with Sibel's story, can you give us just the briefest summary? She went to work for the FBI as a translator shortly after 9/11. Is that correct?
That's right. Now, I had the honor of representing Sibel way back in 2002, maybe actually beginning in 2001, when she first blew the whistle. And I say an honor because I've represented whistleblowers for 28 years, and these people are the salt of the earth. They are some of the most courageous, heroic, smart, stand-up people. They really have a bum rap. I mean, whistleblowers, on the whole, are pretty incredible people, and they're the type of people you want on your side. And Sibel, I put in that class, a stand-up person. Here's her story. It's just like, it's a no-brainer. 9/11 hits. The FBI and the other intelligence agencies need translators. And it's part of the weakness in our whole war on terror to begin with. How can you have an entire counterterrorism establishment that doesn't even speak the language of the enemy and doesn't understand them? Well, they needed translators. They needed them quickly. So they hired lots of translators right after 9/11. And these jobs paid well. So a lot of people with questionable backgrounds and who couldn't qualify as a translator got these jobs. So Sibel, who's well-educated and clearly a fantastic translator, saw what was going on and realized that there were actual security issues where people who she believed might even be spying and giving information to the enemy coming in through more lax security procedures. But as significant, they're doing translations at Guantanamo Bay of terrorists. And the translators are telling Sibel that that they don't know how to translate. But it's not that they don't know Arabic or Urdu. It's the retranslation back into English. The American official doesn't know Arabic. So when the translator may be from Iraq or from Iran and may know that native language perfectly, but can they translate it back into English? And they were telling her that they couldn't. So here it is at the front line on the war on terror, and our so-called intelligence agencies can't get accurate information at the very front line. So she's upset about this, and she reports it, as well she should, and should have been commended. Instead, the FBI followed their credo, thou shalt not embarrass the Bureau. It was embarrassing that they didn't have translators to begin with. It's embarrassing that none of their agents speak Arabic. It's embarrassing that they let people on that with security issues. It's embarrassing that at this critical stage of American history, they let people on who couldn't translate right, and mistakes are being made. So they fire Sabell, literally, boom, out the door. And from there begins her odyssey, not only of what she witnessed, but many national security whistleblowers learned of her case from other agencies and worked with her. She became the director of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. So she had people from all over talking to her, working with her, learning about the faults and the problems from the inside. So you can see why they don't want this published.
Indeed, it's an incredible story that Sabell has told time and again over the years of incompetence and nepotism and cronyism and careerism. But on top of that, there seems to be strong evidence of a great deal of corruption beyond that, of warnings of 9/11 that were known prior to 9/11 and ignored and covered up, and of colleagues of Sabell's there at the Washington field office of the FBI, translators, who were not just incompetent, but who were apparently protecting particular individuals who had friendships and associations with organizations that the FBI was watching. There was a woman named Melek Khan Dickerson, referred to as Jan Dickerson, whose husband was working at the Defense Intelligence Agency. The two of them, by Sabell's account, attempted to pay her off. Jan Dickerson was taking sole proprietary ownership over translating certain individuals' statements, recordings, and was marking them all as not needing translation, not important, apparently working in the interests of nations other than this one. So my impression from Sabell's story is that there's a lot more at stake than simple embarrassment over ordinary, well-intended incompetence. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, following her case, the vehemence in which the Bureau went after her, the invocation of the state secrets privilege, first time that I know it was invoked in a whistleblower case, and the information that she had gathered that she was trying to make public, I think everything you're saying is exactly correct. It was a mess, and the problems, both intentional and through incompetence, were shocking. I know when she went to the Hill, she got immediate support from some leading senators. They were shocked. What's crazy about this case is that the Inspector General, the Department of Justice, investigated, found that her allegations were credible and truthful, published a report, yet Attorney General Ashcroft went into federal court and signed an affidavit saying that Sabell can't tell anything about her case, when the Inspector General had a public report about her case. They wanted to cover this up because what she had found was devastating.
In fact, is it not the case that they gagged the entire Congress so that Congress members could not speak about what they had in some cases already spoken about with regard to this case, and that Congress lay down and took that?
Yeah, it's again bizarre, but these intelligence agencies claim that they can classify stuff, you know, back in history.
Right.
So something's out there. The whole world knows it. It's on the internet. I mean, they could be printing it out in Baghdad and, you know, in hundreds of copies. And somehow they can redeclare classified and threaten people with all types of sanctions. It makes absolutely no sense. In fact, the act of reclassifying something that's already been cleared, why don't you just tell the enemy what they should be reading? You know, with all the thousands of documents and information out in the internet, just, you know, start reclassifying. It's like an advertisement. Here's the good stuff.
Right.
It makes no sense. It serves no policy because it's out there and you can't bring it back except to intimidate, to scare, to censor. And these are the exact reasons why our founding fathers passed the First Amendment. These type of tactics have been used in the past. They were used by the king. They've been used by tyrannies, by dictatorships, and by governments in the past to silence dissent. These are not new tricks. These are old tricks. But these are the tricks that were supposed to be stopped when the United States got its independence and enacted our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. But to see the government doing it again, and to see our institutions that should be defending the Bill of Rights just collapsing under the mildest of pressure is scary.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. We're speaking with Stephen Cohn, who is the executive director of the National Whistleblower Center, one of our leading defenders of the First Amendment, which is under assault, and the author of 8 books on the subject, including The Whistleblower's Handbook. Maybe just one more question related to Sybil Edmonds' story, in that I've had friends who are not naive, who view U.S. foreign policy as being anything but good-intentioned, but who still sort of have trouble understanding Sybil's story. And it's something of the big lie phenomenon. It's almost too big to believe. And they ask me things like, how could the Justice Department and the government not want to go after a story that apparently involved criminal elements selling U.S. nuclear secrets and nuclear weapons information? Assuming that is the case, how do you answer questions like that?
Well, I want to first say that it's not just the Bell making these allegations. The Inspector General of the United States Department of Justice, a presidentially appointed position with full law enforcement authority, a statutory duty to police the FBI, they investigated it. They wrote a book, not a book, they wrote a report, and they confirmed Sybil's allegations and found that she was the victim of illegal reprisal. So this just is an allegation. Second, which is, yeah, how does this happen? Yeah, we can sit and just be dumbfounded, but don't be. I'll tell you a story, because there's a big whistleblower law that protects federal contractors. It's a great law. It was passed in 1986. But in my handbook, I tell the story about why that law got passed. Lots of reasons. But in 1986, the American public was watching television, many people, of a space shuttle being blasted into outer space with a school teacher on. The students and kids around the country were watching. It was a great day for America.
Oh, I was in high school. We were watching.
Yeah, and that space shuttle blew up. And what nobody knew, and the moment it blew up, that NASA went out public and said, you know, this is a shock, we had no warning, blah, 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 all a bunch of lies. What came out in the investigation, where there was a group of engineers that had reported the precise safety problem that caused that explosion and that terrible human tragedy, cost the taxpayers billions, killed a lot of good people. The exact issue. And had reported it up, and they were all retaliated against and told to shut up. And what came out from their story is on the day that shuttle was taking off, while most Americans were looking at it and saying, my God, what a beautiful thing, these engineers were sitting together and praying that it wouldn't blow up. They were actually praying it wouldn't blow up. So we sit back now and we say, my God, how could this happen? It happened. And that's why we need whistleblower laws. That's why we need courageous people who have the courage to stand up. And that's why censorship is so harmful to the public good, because bad things do happen to good people. And one of our most important ways to prevent it is transparency, is to let the person from the inside blow the whistle on it and report it so we can fix it. So, yeah, I've been representing whistleblowers full-time for 28 years, and what I've seen shocks me, often makes me sick, but it surely makes me go home and say, man, no matter how hard it is representing whistleblowers, no matter what the biases are, no matter how bad some of the judges are, how hard it is to win a case, I don't mind at all. I love this job.
Well, you're doing the work that needs to be done, and if we were all supporting whistleblowers as the top priority that it ought to be, maybe there'd be more of them. I'm also stunned with every story of a whistleblower with the hope that they have, as people who've been working within the system that they've believed in, that the system is going to work for them. And someone like Sybelle Edmonds is let down by the FBI, by the Department of Justice, despite that report, by the White House, by the courts, by the media, by the nonprofit industrial complex that doesn't step up for her until she's famous, and stunningly, I think, by Congress, in that, like every other good cause, her cause was winning support and promises and commitments from the Democrats, including Congressman Waxman, as long as they were in the minority in 2005, 2006, and as soon as they took over the Congress in 2007, they essentially told her to get lost. Am I exaggerating here? Is that what happened?
Whistleblowers are not popular. They need public support. Any politician looking at one whistleblower and all the special interests that line up on the other side, and the FBI does massive lobbying on Capitol Hill. They have offices in every congressional district. Many members of Congress are afraid of them. But I've been told time and time again that they have one of the most effective lobbying organizations in America. Now, you don't realize that your taxpayer dollars are paying for the FBI to lobby the Hill. So the congressman or the senator has a whistleblower here, and all those special interests, the defense contractors, the police agencies, whomever they're on the other side, how does a whistleblower win? And it's really public support. And Sybelle went out there and tried to generate public support. I hope her book generates public support. One of the main pushes of the National Whistleblower Center is to get people to support whistleblowers, to sign up, to create a movement. And our webpage on that, to give a plug, is whistleblowerswithanf.org, and there's an easy way to sign up to join them. But until there's a large national constituency pushing for whistleblower rights, we're going to be exactly where we are today. People like Sybelle Edmonds will be hammered, and we'll be fighting an uphill battle.
And where are we today? What are the trends moving from the Bush years into the Obama years? Are things getting better, as candidate Barack Obama led us to believe, or are they getting worse?
A mixed bag. Bush was absolutely terrible for whistleblowing, so just put him out. Nothing good happened under his administration. Obama is a mixed bag. In the area of national security, it has been a disaster. The Edmonds and other cases we've done, it's just been terrible. He's handed it over to the national security establishment. They're interested in covering up. It's just terrible for whistleblowers. In the private sector, he's actually made some great advances through the Dodd-Frank Act, the False Claims Act, and some other laws where whistleblower protections have been strengthened, and we now have some state-of-the-art whistleblower laws that are the best in the world, covering certain industries. our hope and prayer is that this becomes a nationwide, not an exception, but the rule. And our government, including Obama, they know how to pass a good whistleblower law, but they're not willing to do it for federal employees. They're not willing to do it on national security. They're not willing to do it against the pharmaceutical industry and other powerful special interests. So they know how to do it, and it's really up to the American people to organize and to push them to enact a national whistleblower protection act that's state-of-the-art and consistent with what our founding fathers had envisioned for this country.
Can you explain to people, Steve Cohn, the significance of the Espionage Act of 1917, which, as I understand it, was used about three times prior to Obama's presidency to prosecute whistleblowers and has been used seven times thus far during the Obama presidency, including against Bradley Manning, including against former CIA agent John Kiriakou, apparently as a way to shut down whistleblowers?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. I actually wrote a book, one of my earliest books, called American Political Prisoners, Prosecutions Under the Espionage and Sedition Act. This law was passed in World War One, and it was similar to a law that was passed in the late 1700s by President Adams, and that was disgraced. You know, if you read your American history book, they'll talk about this sedition law, and when Jefferson became president, he repealed it, and it was considered a disgraceful period in American history. Well, they passed a similar law again in 1917. At the outbreak of World War One, it was used to put people like Eugene Debs in prison, Zigbill Haywood in prison. They crushed labor unions. They crushed the early socialist movement. They put religious leaders in jail. And they targeted dissidents with this law. It was called the quote-unquote Espionage Act. But it was really, if you read the law, targeted speech, freedom of speech. Disgraceful period in American history. My book fully documents how many people were arrested, many people died in jail. It's terrible.
Speech against World War One. Speech against military recruitment.
Exactly, but it's broadly defined, so people were being put in jail for films they made, for not being respectful to the flag, just crazy stuff. But essentially, if you were a member of a trade union and your union opposed the war, which many did, you were then part of a conspiracy, and they locked you up in jail. They wiped that whole labor union. They wiped that whole political.
We have about 1 minute left. So
yeah, sure.
What is the significance?
So what happened was this law went into hibernation, and because it's disgraceful, but they dusted it off. They're using it against whistleblowers, and it's just absolutely outrageous. And I hope someone learns the lesson that people stand up and we stop these practices.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I appreciate you coming on Talk Nation Radio. We've been speaking with Stephen M. Cohn, the executive director of the National Whistleblowers Center. The website is whistleblowers, with an S on the end, .org. I urge everyone listening to get involved. Stephen, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much. It was great. Thank you.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.